And good evening. It is Intuitive Soul Radio with your host, Lori Houston. And tonight, this is the second interview, and we have the author, Robert Schwartz, who is the author of Your Soul's Plan, Discovering the Real Meaning of Your Life, Real Meaning of the Life You Planned Before You Were Born. So, welcome, Robert.
Thank you, Lori. It's a pleasure to be here.
It is. I have to say that it's an incredibly interesting book, and for those who, you know, have yet to think about some of these concepts, I think it will be a very interesting show because it leaves you with a lot of very deep thought, because you have to think about all of the things that have occurred in your life and start to wonder about what of these things that occurred have you actually planned prior to birth. So before we get into all of this, though, why don't you tell us a little bit about how your journey got you to where you are now?
Well, Lori, the way I ended up writing Your Soul's Plan, and let me just mention quickly for your listeners, there is a website at yoursoulsplan.com where they can download a large part of the book for free. The path to writing this book for me started back in 2003. At that time, I was living in Chicago and was working as a self-employed marketing and communications consultant, basically doing different types of corporate writing and feeling profoundly unfulfilled with this kind of work. You know, I often said to people, I had the feeling that if I fell off the face of the earth, none of my clients would notice that I was gone. They would just plug somebody else into my role and carry right along. But at the same time, I also had the sense that there was a higher calling or a higher purpose to my life. I just didn't know what it was, and I wasn't sure how to figure out what it was. And so coming from a fairly conventional background, as I do, my first attempts to figure out my higher calling in life were conventional in nature. I went to career counselors. I took that Myers-Briggs inventory. I asked all my friends and family, what do you think my purpose, my calling is? And none of this really helped to get me anywhere. So finally, almost in desperation, really, on May 7th of 2003, I did something I had never done before, and that is I had a session with a psychic medium. Now, in this session with the medium, she introduced me to the concept of spirit guides, which at that time was something I had never even heard about. Hmm. She explained that a spirit guide is a highly evolved being with whom we plan our lives prior to birth, and then who then guides us through our lives after we incarnate. And through this particular medium, I was actually able to talk with my guides. One of the things they said to me in this session was, they said, you planned your life before you were born. And I said, why in the world did I plan these challenging experiences that I've had? And they said, well, you planned these things for purposes of spiritual growth. So we went on and we talked about what some of my challenges had been and why I had actually wanted before I was born to have these difficult experiences. Now, I might very well have dismissed all of this as some kind of hallucination on my part, except that earlier in the same session, the guides had said things to me to indicate that they knew literally everything about me. And when I say they knew everything about me, I mean they knew not only what I had done in my life, they also knew about private thoughts and private feelings I had never shared with anyone. And let me give you an example that made a big impact on me. 5 years before this session with the medium, I'd been going through a very difficult time in my personal life. And one day when I was home alone in the privacy of my own home, I said a prayer to God, and I didn't even say this prayer out loud. I just thought it silently in my mind. The prayer was, Dear God, I can't get through this alone. Please send help. Mm-hmm. Now, this was 5 years before the session with the medium. I didn't even remember it, but the guides knew about it, and they reminded me of it. And they said to me, Your prayer was answered, by which they meant that additional non-physical guidance had been sent to me. So as you can imagine, when you're talking to beings who know everything about you, including a prayer you said 5 years earlier, alone in the privacy of your own home, and silently in your own mind, this gives them a lot of credibility. So when they introduced this idea of pre-birth planning, I was listening in rapt attention. Now, in the days and weeks after the session with the medium, I thought about this idea constantly. And the effect that it had on me was that it allowed me to go back over the course of my life, review the quote-unquote bad things that had happened, and in many cases for the very first time, see a deeper meaning or a deeper purpose to these quote-unquote bad events. For me, this was a healing experience, a deeply healing experience. So I realized I was onto a concept that could bring a similar kind of healing to other people, and it was at that point that I first started to think about writing a book about it. 3 years later, it had led to a complete change in my life, and I had written a book that is now called Your Soul's Plan, Discovering the Real Meaning of the Life You Planned Before You Were Born.
Wow. And even one of the people that you interviewed for their story, and it's actually your introduction, although we don't get to it till the end of the book, was someone that when you went into their plan, you discovered that you had you played a part in it.
That's correct. You're referring to a woman named Christina, who is in the chapter on the pre-birth planning of accidents. And let me just back up here and give a little bit of background on the structure of the book. The book is organized by type of life challenge. So there are chapters on the pre-birth planning of physical illness, having handicapped children, drug addiction, alcoholism, deafness, blindness, the loss of a loved one, and accidents. The woman you're referring to, Christina, is one of two stories in the chapter on the pre-birth planning of accidents. And briefly, her story is that she is blown up in a bomb explosion. And when we go into her pre-birth planning session with a particular medium who is able to access these pre-birth planning sessions, we hear Christina talking to the future bomber and actually planning to be in the bomb explosion. One of the things that comes up in this session, as you mentioned, is that I'm there. I hear her planning this, and I go up to her and I say, I am planning to write books about how we plan our lives before we're born. May I share your story in one of my books? And she's delighted by this, and she says, yes, of course you can. Now, the question, of course, that everybody will ask who's listening to this is, why in the world would somebody actually want to be blown up in a bomb explosion? Well, what happened in Christina's case is that she wanted to have an incarnation as a gifted healer. And she knew pre-birth that if she could heal herself from the devastating effects of this bomb explosion, she would then be able to take all of that wisdom and knowledge about healing and turn it outward in service to humanity. In fact, this is exactly what happened, because after she recovered from the bomb explosion, and by the way, her recovery took 2 years and 10 reconstructive surgeries, mm-hmm. but by the time she recovered, she had made up her mind that she wanted to be a healer. She went on to get a PhD in speech-language pathology. Mm-hmm. She set up a private clinical practice, and at this point in her career, she has now healed literally thousands of people. Christina actually has the ability to go into a person's brain energetically, by which I mean non-invasively, and restore language processing capability in someone who has lost that due to stroke or accident. Mm-hmm. So we are talking here about an extraordinarily gifted healer, and the only reason she can do any of this is because she healed herself from the effects of that bomb explosion. Now, you might then ask the question, well, what is the value of knowing about someone's pre-birth plan? Christina, in some respects, is the signature story in the book because she so beautifully answers that question. When she was first in the bomb explosion and for several years afterwards, she was, as you can imagine, extremely angry, both with the experience itself and of course, with the person who planted the bomb, who, by the way, was never caught and was unknown to her. But she was intensely angry at the person who had inflicted all of this suffering on her. Now, she could have chosen to go through the rest of her life carrying that anger inside her. She could have chosen to spend the rest of her life bitter and resentful. She might even have chosen to devote the rest of her life to tracking down the bomber and taking revenge. Mm-hmm. But because Christina came into an awareness of her pre-birth plan, she was actually able to forgive the bomber. And the way she came into this awareness is that one day during that two-year convalescence, while she was lying in her hospital bed in a great deal of pain, Christina heard a voice in her head, a voice that was not her own. And the voice said to her, "You planned this." And Christina said, "Why?" And then the voice explained to her what I just shared with you, which is that she wanted to have a lifetime as a gifted healer. It turns out the voice she was hearing was one of her spirit guides. So in the coming years, she had many, many conversations with her guides about her pre-birth plan, and in particular, the planning of the bomb explosion. So by the time she met me, this awareness of pre-birth planning was something that she'd been working with for a very long time. She knew all about her pre-birth plan. She understood exactly why she had wanted to be in the bomb explosion. And her awareness of this plan enabled her to do two quite amazing things in her life. When I interviewed Christina, she said to me, "Rob, I have completely forgiven the person who planted the bomb. Now, understand that this is somebody who her entire body was scorched head to toe by the flames from the explosion. When she got to the hospital, doctors actually had to hold magnets over her eyeballs in order to extract the shrapnel from the pipe. So we're talking here about a level of suffering that is almost unimaginable. And yet here was Christina in her interview saying to me, I have completely forgiven the person who caused all of that suffering. That, I think, is an extraordinary statement, and the only reason she got to that place of forgiveness is because she understood it was part of her own pre-birth plan. But then she took it a step further. She said to me, Rob, I am deeply grateful to the person who planted that bomb. Now again, given the level of suffering that she went through, for her to say, I have completely forgiven this person, and I am grateful to this person, that to me is truly extraordinary. And I believe that all of us can do that in regard to our challenges. Christina is not unusual. Her challenge is, but she herself is not. If she can get to a place of forgiveness and gratitude, then you and I and everyone listening today, we can all do the same.
Mm-hmm. So let's back up and let's talk about this premise and the what if. So basically, we're talking about having, you know, a pre-birth council meeting, so to speak, and we bring in people. So why don't you fill this in? Talk about what the premise is that we actually do prior to birth.
The premise is that, just as you said, basically, we have what I refer to as a pre-birth planning session. And in this session, we get together with the other members of our soul group and our spirit guides, and we decide what we would like to learn in the coming lifetime and how to best learn it. Now, let me back up and explain what a soul group is.
I was just going to say, because are they always people from our soul group, or is it just that they're people from past lives? So you go for.
Well, most of the people we will be talking with will be from our soul group. A soul group is a collection of souls who are at more or less the same stage of evolution, which is to say at the same vibration or the same frequency. And you and the other members of your soul group will have shared many, many lives together in which you will take turns playing every conceivable role for each other. So you and the other members of your soul group will be husband and wife, mother and daughter, father and son, siblings, best of friends, mortal enemies, murderer, and the one who is murdered. You will play all of these different roles to foster your own evolution and that of the other members of your soul group. Now, as I understand it, people often ask, well, how big are the soul groups? As I understand it, the average size is 17 souls, but some are over 100 and some are much smaller than 17, but average being 17. Now, you asked, are only members of the soul group present in the pre-birth planning session? My understanding is no. Sometimes, and it's not unusual, people will work with members of other soul groups for all kinds of different reasons. And you may be working with somebody who is more evolved than you or less evolved. A very common thing to do would be to incarnate into a family in which the other members of the family are younger souls, less evolved souls. And I imagine some people who are listening now are laughing or shaking their heads or both, because frequently people respond to members of their family that way. But understand that this is by design. If there's somebody in your family that really gets under your skin and who you consider to be perhaps a younger, less experienced soul, it may very well be the case, and probably is the case, that you went to that person before birth and said, I would like to learn, and then fill in the blank. Mm-hmm. Unconditional love, compassion, forgiveness, patience, empathy, balance, cooperation, sharing, and on and on and on. Would you be the mother, father, brother, sister, or even child who helps me to learn these lessons? And then the other soul, out of love for you, says, yes, of course, I will be happy to do that for you. Now, once we get into body, we don't remember the pre-birth plan, so we find that in our families frequently there are people who challenge us tremendously, but those challenges are set up pre-birth out of love to help us learn and grow. Now, the other beings who are present in the pre-birth planning session are our spirit guides. Sometimes other members of the soul group act as spirit guides for us once we're in body. These are souls who are not incarnating at the same time. Other times, the spirit guides are not members of our soul group. They're much more highly evolved beings who just serve as guides to us when we're in body. There is also something that in some of the literature is referred to as the Council of Elders. And this apparently is a council of very advanced beings whom we meet with before the pre-birth planning session, and in conjunction, in consultation with the Council of Elders, we plan out the general themes we're going to explore over many different lifetimes, the general direction we want to go in, and then when we get to the pre-birth planning session with the soul group and the spirit guides, that's where the details are worked out. That's how we implement the broader vision that we worked up with the Council of Elders. So that's the basic concept.
Mm-hmm. Do you think everything is planned?
No, I don't. But I will say this. I don't believe that anything can happen to a person unless your vibration allows it to come into your experience. So this really takes out the idea that anyone is ever a victim. Mm-hmm. And I understand, I fully appreciate that this is a concept that may be counterintuitive and that is tremendously difficult to understand from the human perspective, because we look around and we see all sorts of terrible or seemingly terrible things happening in the world, and we think, how could a loving God allow these things to happen? But energetically, a basic law of the universe is that nothing can come into your experience unless your vibration allows it to be there. Now, having said that, I don't believe that everything is planned before birth. I think certainly the broad outline of the lifetime is created before birth. And I think, and what I've seen in my research, is that a lot of the details are worked out, down to the point of where are you going to live, which house, which schools are you going to go to, details like that. But to give you an example of something that was not planned, in my book, in the chapter on deafness and blindness, mm-hmm. I share the story of a man named Bob Feinstein who was born prematurely. And at the hospital, he was placed in an incubator. The nurse, quote-unquote, accidentally put too much oxygen into the incubator. The excess oxygen damaged the cells in the retinas of his eyes, rendering him blind. What happened at that point is the spirit guides gathered next to the incubator. They waited for his soul to leave the infant body. Then they took his spirit back to the pre-birth planning place, and they explained to him what was happening, because he was very confused and disoriented. And they said, basically, there has been this accident at the hospital. Too much elemental oxygen has been put into the incubator by the nurse. If you choose to continue with this lifetime, you will be blind. And they actually showed him images of the baby's eyes so that he could understand what was happening. So Bob says to them, basically, well, what are the pros and cons of continuing with this lifetime? And they say, well, let's talk about that. Then what ensues is a fascinating dialogue in which they bring in a woman named Maureen, who has planned to be his wife later in the incarnation. The plan challenge in this case is that Bob is a homosexual man who planned to discover his homosexuality within the context of a heterosexual marriage. So the challenge was to be one of love for self and love for his wife. In other words, would Bob love himself enough and love his wife enough to stand up in truth and integrity, announce his homosexuality, and leave the marriage? That was the challenge he had planned for himself. But when he's left blind as a result of the incubator accident, the spirit guides bring in Maureen, his future wife. They tell her what's happening. They say, do you want to continue with the planned marriage? She, for reasons of her own, says no. She actually backs out. And then they say to Bob, well, if you continue without Maureen, you will still have a great challenge in this lifetime. It will be a challenge to self-love and emotional independence. Would you like to continue? And Bob, because he's had a number of previous lifetimes in which he was relatively isolated, some of them were as a monk and a scholar, he's comfortable with the fact that his blindness will lead to some isolation. And he says, all right, I will take on this unplanned challenge. And so there you have a story of a great life challenge that was actually not planned before birth, but in fact was decided upon shortly after birth. The important thing here, though, is that nothing happened to Bob against his will. He was given the choice, do you want to experience a life as a blind person or not? And then he made the decision, yes, I can work with that, and I will grow from that, so let's do it.
Mm-hmm. And it's really brings a lot of questions to mind, and it really does make you think about all of the challenges that you've had in your life. So keeping with this thought, though, do you think we have free will once we create the plan?
Yes, that's something that I've seen again and again in the research.
Just a sec. Your phone is... try talking now.
Yes, I've what I've seen in my research for your soul's plan, that again and again, Spirit has told us that once you're in body, you as the incarnate personality have free will. Every person has free will all the time. So you can deviate from your soul's pre-birth plan in any moment, and you can deviate from it as much or as little as you like. Now, this sometimes raises the question. People will say, well, if my soul has planned a great challenge for me, can I get out of it? Can I use my free will to avoid the challenge? The answer to that question is both yes and no. What I saw in my research is that challenges are planned with varying degrees of probability. So there are some that are just possibilities. There are others that, given the incarnational circumstances, are almost certainly going to happen. And then you have a whole range in between those two poles. If the particular challenge is of tremendous importance to the soul, it will be planned as a higher probability. So it may not be something that can be avoided. But the one thing I want to point out here is that avoiding a planned challenge is not necessarily a good thing to do, because the challenge has been planned for good reason. It's something that your soul feels you need in order to evolve. And if you were to somehow find a way to avoid it, then you would miss out on all the learning and growth and wisdom that would come from the experience. And so you might very well get back to the non-physical realm at the end of the lifetime, look back on the missed challenge as a missed learning experience, and then decide to plan it all over again for the next lifetime.
Right. Right, exactly. So if you don't do it this time, then, yeah, you kind of get to re-experience it again. But so, okay, so free will, destiny, choices, how does this all play?
You're asking what is the intersection between free will and pre-birth planning?
Or destiny, or, I mean, it sounds like destiny, like, you know, people throw these terms around and you're kind of going, well, what's the difference? What, you know, what about choices? We have the choices, we certainly have free will and choice, but some of this seems like it, whether it's our destiny because we've chosen it, or whether it's our destiny because it's just there are things that are going to happen.
I understand what you're asking. Let me answer your question, Lori, with a hypothetical story. Let's suppose that there is a soul who has a multiple incarnation history of deferring to the wishes of others. So this is a soul who, once it gets into body, doesn't live life the way it wants to live. It lives life the way everybody else tells it life should be lived. When this soul returns to spirit after those lifetimes and has a life review, as we all do, this soul will see that it has this tendency. And it will say to itself, I would like to heal that tendency once and for all. So it might come up with a plan, something along the following lines. First, it will decide to carry forward this energy to defer to the wishes of others. It will plant that energy into the body for the upcoming lifetime for the purpose of healing it. Now, let's say that this soul is choosing to incarnate as a woman, and I'm making the soul a woman arbitrarily, so no sexism is intended. Having made that choice, the soul could go to another soul in its soul group, somebody who, let's say, has the opposite tendency. So this is a soul who, when it gets into body, tends to dominate others and run roughshod over them, tell them what to do, not have sufficient respect for their wishes, and so forth. Now, this soul will also be aware of its tendency from the life review and will also want to heal that tendency. So let's say that this soul is incarnating as a man. So the woman who is the soul who's incarnating as a woman with the tendency to defer to the wishes of others goes to the soul who is incarnating as the man who tends to dominate others and says the following: I am carrying forward this tendency to defer to others for healing. Why don't you and I create a pre-birth plan to marry around the age of 30? And we understand that this will be a very difficult relationship, but what we hope that will come from this is that I will learn how to stand up for myself, and you will learn how to respect the wishes of others. And the other soul, out of love for her, agrees. So that's the plan. Mm-hmm. Now, let's say that when the woman is 25 years old, she gets a job in which her employer is walking all over her. She marshals her internal resources, makes a stand, and says to the employer, stop. You may not treat me like that. If you want me to continue working here, you must treat me with respect and kindness. In the moment she takes a stand like that, there's a huge increase in her vibration. Now, if she can sustain that increased vibration until age 30, when the planned marriage is supposed to happen, then one of two things will occur. Either she and the man she planned to marry never meet, because her vibration is now much higher than they thought it would be, and so by virtue of the law of attraction, they're never brought together. Or, if they do meet each other, now there's no spark, there's no attraction. She's on one vibration, he's on another, they have one date, they don't really care for each other, and it never leads to a marriage. So here's a story of a planned challenge, a difficult marriage, and the need for the challenge was obviated by her decision 5 years earlier to stand up for herself. In other words, she learned what she hoped the marriage would teach her, and because she learned it using her free will, then the planned challenge never needed to take place.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. And so therefore, we do have choices and we do have free will. And as long as we continue on the plan, then, and that this kind of moves into the next point, which I was going to talk about. In the one case you talked about with regards to death of a loved one, several others, I think, as well, where, you know, there were other exit points that they could have taken. There were other times that you can leave your body. And sometimes, let's talk about that. Like, when is it, I guess, is if you are fulfilling what you're needing to fulfill, you can then leave at a different time or earlier or later?
Well, that's half the picture. As I understand it, a soul will choose to end an incarnation when one of two things happens. Either the soul has learned everything it came here to learn, or conversely, the soul concludes that it will not be able to learn what it came here to learn. In either of those two circumstances, then it's appropriate to end the lifetime. Now, in the there's a chapter on the pre-birth planning of death of a loved one.
Mm-hmm.
And in this chapter, I share the story of a woman, Valerie, who loses two people she cares a great deal about. One is a fiancé. His name is D.C. D.C. was a professional diver. And the story here is that he was killed in a diving accident just 48 hours after they got engaged. And it was a particularly heartbreaking story because 1 hour after he proposed to Valerie, this was back in the days when we had beepers, his beeper went off. It was his employer calling him for a diving assignment. He jumped in his truck, drove away, and Valerie never saw him again. That was 1 hour after they got engaged. And then she also lost her only son, her only child, a son named Dustin, to a seemingly accidental drug overdose. Now, when we work with the mediums and channels to find out Valerie's pre-birth plan, DC's pre-birth plan, Dustin's pre-birth plan, in one particular session, DC came in and spoke with us through the medium. And we asked him about this idea of exit points. You know, Sylvia Brown uses the term exit points to describe the various points in a lifetime when a soul has planned prior to birth to be able to leave the incarnation. And DC told us that this is essentially correct, that he had several pre-planned exit points. One was the diving accident, which is the exit point he took, but there were others, and he described them quite specifically. One, for example, was a motorcycle accident, and then there were a couple others that I don't recall off the top of my head, but he had these different exit points stationed throughout his life, as we all do, in case his soul wanted to end the incarnation. We also talked with Dustin, her son. And the story here was very interesting because it turns out that I mentioned Dustin died from a seemingly accidental drug overdose. We actually went into Dustin's pre-birth planning session, and we heard him talking to the soul of the drug dealer. And the story here, what we learned is that those two souls, Dustin and the drug dealer, had a past life together in which they were soldiers in a king's army. This was back in medieval times. And the soul of the drug dealer was mortally hurt in battle. He lay dying in a great deal of pain on the battlefield, and he said to Dustin, "Would you run me through with your sword and put me out of my pain?" And Dustin obliged him. So when Dustin was planning a short incarnation for purposes of his own, he went to this soul and said, essentially, "Would you return the favor to me if I choose to take an exit point in my mid-teens? Would you be the person who sells me the drugs that lead to my death?" And this soul, out of love for him, says, yes, I will be happy to play that role for you. This is a tremendously challenging concept to understand, because we would look at this situation and we would say, this is a terrible thing. Somebody sold this boy drugs, and he's an innocent boy who died prematurely because of the evil actions or the bad actions of the drug dealer. And from a purely human standpoint, that is what happened, and that's a valid interpretation. But let's step back from the picture now and look at it from the level of the soul. From that level, what we see is very different. Then we see one soul playing a role out of love for another soul and giving the other soul the experience that he requested. This is one of the reasons I wrote this book, because what is happening from the level of the personality is very different from what is happening from the level of the soul. When we step back from the picture and take this broader perspective, the soul-level perspective, then we understand that there really is no meaningless or random suffering. And these events that to us seem to be so tragic, there actually is a deeper spiritual purpose to it. So in this case, you know, the seemingly accidental drug overdose, really not an accident. And rather than condemn or judge the person who sold the drugs, we can be forgiving when we understand that this is really part of a larger plan consented to by all parties involved.
Mm-hmm. It brings up a lot of the stories that you talked about where, you know, some people just chose to come in, you know, and it seems like they may have put their own spiritual growth on hold so that they could help somebody else. Because some of their lives, like the one with the mother and daughter, you know, the mother sort of chose to play a very significant role in abusing, and in one where, you know, most people would look at that role and think, you know, why would anybody do that? And it seemed like she was all like putting her own path on hold so that she could help this other soul experience what she wanted to experience.
Well, let me explain to your listeners more about the story you're mm-hmm. referring to. There's a chapter in Your Soul's Plan about the pre-birth planning of physical illness, and there are two stories in that chapter. One is a gentleman who, believe it or not, plans before birth to have the AIDS mm-hmm. virus. The second story is the one you're referring to, and this is the story of a woman named Doris who plans the potential for breast cancer before she's born. And specifically what she plans is that in her mid-teens, her mother, who was an alcoholic, will speak to her in a particularly abusive manner and basically push her to such an extent that she's at a crossroads at which she has to decide one of two things. Either she's going to believe what her mother is saying about her, or she's going to reject what the mother is saying about her. The potential for breast cancer is planned so that it will kick in if she accepts the judgments from her verbally abusive alcoholic mother, which is in fact what happened. That's the free will choice she made. She internalized what her mother was telling her about herself. And then that lack of self-love, that lack of self-esteem, manifested in the form of breast cancer. The breast cancer was intended to give her an opportunity to teach herself, to learn how to love herself more and how mm-hmm. to appreciate herself more, which in fact it actually did. So when we go into the pre-birth planning session, we hear some of the conversation between Doris and her mother, and the mother does say something to indicate that she's, at least to some extent, deferring her own growth mm-hmm. in order to play this role for Doris so that Doris can grow. Now, my understanding of what is happening there has evolved since Your Soul's Plan came out.
Okay.
And what I understand now is that although there is this component of perhaps, to some extent, putting someone's own growth and learning on hold in order to be of service to others, my understanding now is that the roles we agree to play pretty much also always foster our own growth and learning. So
okay.
I suspect that if we had delved more deeply into the mm-hmm. conversation between Doris and her mother, we would have heard some conversation in which Doris's mother talked about how she herself would evolve as a result of playing this role for Doris. because ultimately each lifetime is lived for the evolution of the soul who is incarnating. And so my most current understanding is that we script roles, yes, in which we are of service to each other, but also the roles that we're playing are of service to ourselves. Ultimately, that's the purpose of a lifetime here, is for the incarnating soul to evolve on its own path.
Mm-hmm. And there was even one where the soul said, you know, they didn't necessarily need to come back, but chose to come back because they would help. So there, it brings me to, you know, different types of questions, because, you know, a lot of times you think that, you know, we're really here to reach enlightenment. So if somebody's saying, well, I didn't really need to come back, but I chose to come back to assist in, you know, your soul's evolution, does that mean that person was enlightened? Does it, I mean, it, where does enlightenment come? And I know that this is, you know, one of those words out there that people are, I think we misunderstand completely what the word means, because I think the concept of our minds tend to have an ideal vision of what it's supposed to be, and our ego, of course, and our minds, they play this game. So I don't know necessarily what that means, but there's a part of me that thinks, well, what is the true purpose?
Well, let's tell the listeners about the story you're referring to. In the chapter on the pre-birth planning of alcoholism and drug addiction, there's a story of a mother and a son. The mother's name is Sharon and the son is Tony. And Tony plans, for reasons of his own prior to birth, to experience a heroin addiction. And we're told quite clearly it was not just that he planned drug addiction. He wanted specifically a heroin addiction because the drug heroin is so strong, it would give him the sort of evolutionary experience, the growth experience, the challenge that he wanted once embodied. Now, Tony sets up this plan on his own. Then he has to choose his parents, as we all do. So he goes to the soul of Sharon, the woman who eventually becomes his mother, and he says to her, basically, I am planning this experience of drug addiction for reasons of my own. Would you be the mother who shepherds me through this experience? Then we learn that Sharon is so highly evolved that she no longer needs to reincarnate. She's done here. But out of her great love for Tony, who is someone she's had many lifetimes with, she says, yes, I will agree to come back and be your mother and guide you through this experience that you want for your own growth and learning. But again, she didn't have to do that. Now, she is being of very great service to Tony by playing that role. But even though she doesn't have to come back, I don't believe that it doesn't serve her either. I believe that any time we are of service to others, we foster our own evolution. So in some way, by coming back to the earth plane, Sharon is continuing along her evolutionary path through her service to her son, Tony. Now, you ask, what is enlightenment? There are many, many definitions of that, and I would not pretend to have the ultimate definition. I think one possible definition of enlightenment is that we remember who we really are, which to me means we remember that we are soul. We are light beings. We are holy beings. We are eternal beings. We are basically sparks of God, sparks of divinity. And we put ourselves in the physical bodies, and then we forget that that's who we really are. We become completely identified with the personality. We can become completely identified with the body. And this results in a lot of suffering because we are over-identified with the personality and with the body. You know, a concept that is important to understand here is that just because you have a thing, that doesn't mean you are the thing you have. Mm-hmm. For example, if you have a horse, that doesn't mean that you are a horse. And by the same token, just because you have a body and you have a personality, that doesn't mean that you are the body or the personality. From my perspective, you're not. Who are you then? Well, you are soul. You are soul. So one of the reasons I wrote Your Soul's Plan is to facilitate a shift from personality body consciousness to soul consciousness. In other words, to help people, maybe just a little bit, stop thinking of themselves so much as personality and so much as their body, and start to think of themselves a little bit more as holy, eternal, courageous souls. Now you might ask, what is the advantage of doing that? The advantage is that it lightens our suffering, because as we step back from identification with the personality and the body and start to view the lifetime from the soul level, then we understand that this is really just a play on a stage, and we are actors on the stage acting out the script that we ourselves created prior to birth. So when you step back from it and look at it from that broader perspective, then things that seem deathly serious to the average person, suddenly they're not so serious anymore. You know, it would be like if you were actually in a play on a literal stage, and somehow you forgot that you were an actor, and you started to completely identify with the character you were playing. And then let's suppose that another character in the play does something terrible to you, hurts you in some way, and now because you believe that you actually are the character in the play, you think that this thing that was done to you is something truly terrible. But if you could wake up and remember that you are not the actor, but rather a person playing a part on a stage, then you would be able to step back from what seemed to happen. You wouldn't take it nearly as seriously. You might even be able to laugh about it. And so that's the kind of perspective that I'm trying to foster here.
Mm-hmm. What about karma?
Well, let's define what karma is. Mm-hmm. Many people think of karma as some kind of cosmic debt. And in the research I did for Your Soul's Plan, that is not what I saw. What I saw is that karma is a neutral, impersonal law of the universe, much like gravity. So to say that you are suffering because you have bad karma, because you're being punished for something bad you did in a past life, none of that makes any sense from what I saw in my research. That would be as though, let's say after someone listens to this interview, if they go outside and they trip and fall on the sidewalk, that would be like the person getting angry with gravity, saying, gravity is punishing me, gravity is bad, gravity is evil, I have been victimized by gravity. No one would talk like that way. It would be absurd to say those things because we understand that gravity is a neutral, impersonal law of the universe. Karma operates in much the same way. If you have done something, quote-unquote, bad in a past life, you are not punished for it in another lifetime, but when you have your life review, you might say, I willingly and consciously choose to experience that which I inflicted on someone else because I want to understand fully and completely what it is that I did. That's really what karma boils down to.
Although they may have chosen in a pre-birth plan to actually do that for someone they loved.
That's possible. I mean, again, it could be as part of one's own growth and learning, mm-hmm. Or in service to someone else, or more likely, it's going to be a combination of both.
Right. And it really does seem that, you know, in that pre-birth plan, you know, we are in service to those other souls. As we are thinking of our own evolution, we are also in service to many others as we walk this path.
What I have seen in my research is that the fastest way to enlightenment, however one defines mm-hmm. that, is through service to others. And this is why when we go into these pre-birth planning sessions, in every single one, without exception, we heard souls talking about their desire to be of service to the other members of their soul group, to be of service to humanity, to be of service to the earth. This theme of service to others was present to one degree or another in literally every pre-birth planning session. And I think the reason for that is that this is the fastest evolutionary path.
Mm-hmm. I think it's really fascinating that, you know, all of the stories you chose are, you know, pretty much ordinary people's lives. Like, it's not the, you know, the guru or the teacher or the, you know, they're really, you know, what appear to be very very ordinary experiences that have very deep meaning and very profound spiritual growth.
Well, they are ordinary people. There are 10 people whose stories I share in Your Soul's Plan, and they are very ordinary people. And this was a conscious decision on my part because I didn't want to fill the book with stories of enlightened people because the average reader has a tendency when they read about people like that to say, this person is different from me. I cannot do what this person mm-hmm. did. And that kind of distancing makes the book less impactful. And I didn't want that to happen. I wanted to share the stories of average people who were experiencing common challenges. And the other thing I should point out here is that not all, in fact, not even most of the 10 people were familiar with, nor do they necessarily believe in this concept of pre-birth uh-huh. planning. You know, I could have filled the book with people like Christina, who in one form or another found out about it on their own and are absolutely convinced of its validity. But that also would make the stories in the book, those people, very different from the average reader.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not what I wanted to do. I wanted to, for the most part, interview people who are representative of the population as a whole, who don't necessarily even know about pre-birth planning. Certainly they were open to the concept, or they would never have agreed to interview with me.
Mm-hmm.
But many of them, if you were to write to them and ask them, what do you think about pre-birth planning, I think most of them would say to you, I still don't know quite what to make of it.
Hmm. Although I would imagine that hearing this information must have brought them some sort of peace.
I think it did. But again, we have free will, so what
right.
they do with the information is up to them.
Hmm.
Christina is one of the most dramatic examples, and again, she came to that information on her own, but certainly it completely turned her life around and brought her great peace and joy. But I think, yes, to one degree or another, most, if not all, of the people, a seed was planted, and they started to look at their life challenge in a different way. Whether or not they fully embraced the idea that they planted, I think, you know, most of them are still not sure. They don't really know. But they've started to look at the life challenge, whatever it might be, in a new way. In other words, instead of just saying, oh, this really bad thing happened to me, and it's devoid of meaning, now they start to wonder, well, what if this guy Rob Schwartz is right? What if I really did plan this challenge before I was born? Why might I have done that? And when you ask that question, why might I have planned this? That opens up an entirely new way of seeing the world. Even if you're not sure about pre-birth planning, just speculating on why you might have planned something takes you into that deeper spiritual meaning of the challenge and just opens up a completely different way of looking at the world.
Mm-hmm. And also with your examples, and I'm sure with, you know, all the other books that you're planning to write, I think you will always find that the underlying primary theme seems to be about love and seems to be, you know, knowing yourself as love, whether it's through empathy or forgiveness or patience or non-judgmental courage, all the things that you talk about that people, you know, may say in different words, really the theme is love.
Yes, I think that really is the most important message that came out of the research. And, you know, I'll share a personal experience. Shortly after I had the session with the medium that I spoke about earlier, I had an experience in which I was home in my apartment in Chicago, just having an average work day, decided to take a break from work and go for a walk. So I was walking down the street in Evanston, Illinois, and suddenly I was overcome with this feeling of overwhelming unconditional love for every person I saw. And I remember this so clearly because the first person I saw was a cab driver sitting behind the wheel of his cab waiting for a fare to come along. And I looked at this man who was a complete stranger and felt just pure unconditional love for him. And then I looked up and there was a man's barber shop on the corner. I looked through the window and I saw the barber cutting a client's hair. Again, two complete strangers. And as I looked at these people, I was just overwhelmed with pure love for them. And then I looked around and I saw a young woman, a mother, pushing an infant in a stroller down the street. And again was this feeling of overwhelming unconditional love. Everywhere I looked, every time I saw another person, I was just filled with unconditional love for that person. Now, I believe that what happened here is that I was in some form of immediate enhanced communion with my own soul. So it's as though my soul were saying to me, this love is who you really are. This is your true nature. And I believe that my soul gifted me with that experience because when I did the research for Your Soul's Plan, we saw in every pre-birth planning session that the true nature of the soul is love. The only thing we saw was souls expressing love for each other and also for themselves. So I believe that my soul created and gifted me with that experience because if I had not had that experience, I would still have found the same results in my research. But I think there would always have been this little voice at the back of my head saying, how do you know that what you're finding is true?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I know it's true because I experienced it myself. And that's why I can say to your listeners, Lori, that I believe with complete confidence and certainty that we as souls are made literally from the energy of unconditional love. Now, we forget that when we come into body, but I believe that the ultimate purpose of life challenges is to wake us up and remind us that our true nature is love. Because we have free will, some of us don't wake up, some of us don't remember that. We make different choices. But some of us do wake up and remember that our true nature is love. Now, you might ask the question, well, why does the soul want to have this experience of forgetting its true nature and then remembering it? The only way I can explain that is by analogy. Suppose after the interview is over today that you, God forbid, are hit on the head by a falling tree branch and you're knocked unconscious. And when you come to, you have amnesia. You don't remember that you're Lori. So what would happen at that point? Well, most likely, everyone who loves you and cares about you, all of your family and friends, would rally around you and they would undertake what amounts to a massive re-education project. They would produce every photograph that you're in, every letter you've ever sent or received, every email you've ever sent or received. They would put all of this information in front of you to help you remember who you really are. Now, you, lacking memory, would pay particularly close attention to every little detail and nuance. You would pay such close attention that by the time this re-education project was over, it would be correct in a sense to say that you would now have a better idea of who you are than you did prior to the amnesia, because you would have scrutinized every little detail with such great attention. This is kind of a rough approximation, I think, of what the soul is doing by coming into body, forgetting that it is love, and then reawakening and remembering that it's love. By the time that process is over, at the end of a lifetime, the soul has a deeper, more profound self-knowing of what it means to be a soul made from the energy of unconditional love.
Mm-hmm. We haven't talked about another area of the book that seems, I guess, important, and that's the mediums and channels that you used. And when I went over your newsletter this morning, you talked about, you know, the other areas, the ways that people can get some of this information on them for themselves.
Yeah.
So why don't we talk about, you know, I mean, it's not so much the people necessarily, although you found some people all having very unique skills in understanding, you know, pre-birth planning. I know that there are lots of people out there like hypnotherapists who may be able to go into these states. Whether they believe it, I think, is part of the big thing they have to get through, I think, for them to be able to assist someone else to get there. But, you know, I've been with lots of channelers. I don't know, I haven't experienced a channeler yet that has gone into my pre-birth planning. Maybe I never requested it, but, you know, so there's lots of things. There's the Akashic Records as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are things that we can do to possibly understand our own. We could go to the mediums and channels that you list, or we can, what else can we do?
Well, there are a number of ways to find out what we planned before birth. As we've discussed, the method I used in writing Your Soul's Plan was to work with mediums and channels who in one form or another could access information about the pre-birth plan. One of the mediums, as I mentioned, is actually able to see and hear the conversations we have with one another in the pre-birth planning sessions. The other mediums had different skills. One of them was able to channel people's higher selves. One of them was able to talk quite easily with those who had returned to spirit. Another one of the collaborators was able to channel angels and spirit guides. So we got at the information from different angles.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't like to say to people, you must work with a medium or channel to find out what you planned before you were born, because that's disempowering. That makes you dependent upon another person. It's a valid method, but it's not the only one. The other things you can do, there's a meditation on my website. You can do that yourself, and it's free at yoursoulsplan.com. There's a page called Accessing Your Pre-Birth Plan. Work with the meditation that is on that page. Then you don't have to depend upon someone else to give you information. Another thing you can do is numerology. And this you can do either on your own quite easily or with a good numerologist. When I first started down my spiritual path, I bought a basic book on numerology, did some of the basic calculations, and I was absolutely amazed at how accurate and detailed the information was that I was able to come up with on my own. Another method is astrology. Any good astrologer can tell you a lot about your plan for a particular lifetime. And then you mentioned another one of the methods, which is hypnotic regression. There's a gentleman named Michael Newton who wrote a couple of famous books, Journey of Souls and Destiny of Souls. He is a hypnotic regression therapist who takes people back to the life between life state. In other words, he regresses people to what they were doing back in spirit before they incarnated. And as part of that exploration, you can, if you want to, find out what you planned before you were born. He has something called the Newton Institute, which has trained a number of therapists around the world, and there's a complete listing of them on their website. If you are hypnotizable, and most people are, that's a valid way to get at the pre-birth plan. So you can come at it from a number of different directions. But I would encourage people, start with the meditation at yoursoulsplan.com, because then you are not dependent upon someone else. And anytime you can access information on your own, that's always the most empowering way to go.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. So one last question. So you've talked a lot about it already, but what did you learn from this experience? And I know that you're planning more books, so
yes.
Talk about that as well.
I think the main thing I learned from this experience is that there really is no such thing as meaningless, random, mm-hmm. arbitrary, empty suffering. Everything that happens on the earth plane has great, great meaning behind it. Frequently, we don't know what the meaning is. Sometimes we can figure it out, sometimes we can't. But I believe that it's always there. So the effect that this has had on me personally is that if something seemingly bad happens to me, I don't look at it as meaningless. I understand that it's for my own growth and learning. Now, that doesn't mean that I like it. It doesn't mean that my life is completely free of suffering. It's not. It doesn't mean that I wouldn't sidestep the experience if I could figure out a way to do that. But what it does mean is that whatever suffering I might experience is tremendously lightened by my understanding that it has meaning. You know, I can recall years ago when something bad would happen, I can recall thinking to myself, if only I could see a deeper meaning in this, then it wouldn't be so bad. But I didn't see the deeper meaning at that time. Now I know that there is always a deeper meaning, and so whatever happens, that greatly lightens any suffering that I might experience. Now, in terms of future books, the next book will be a continuation of the first, in that I'm going to look at the pre-birth planning of a number of different life challenges. Some of these challenges will be things that are harder for people to accept than anybody would actually want to experience. And so in that respect, I think the second book will be more challenging reading than the first. For any of your listeners who may be interested in sharing their story and possibly working with the mediums and channels to find out about their pre-birth plan, I am always looking for people to interview. And if you would consider sharing your story, and if you might like to work with the mediums, you can reach me at yoursoulsplan@yahoo.com and just send me an email briefly describing what your life challenges had been. And some of those people may end up being people I work with for the next book.
Mm, that's great. Well, Rob, you've been a pleasure. I think what you've shared with us and the depth of what you've written in your book and how you have communicated that is, you know, quite enlightening in itself, because I think, you know, a lot of times, sure, we've heard, you know, Debbie Ford talks about finding the gift in things, but to actually really think about, well, what if I actually chose this? What if these are the pieces that I really chose? I mean, I remember my own experience of, you know, working in the government and having what I considered was the boss from hell, and knowing that she played a part in taking me out of that environment, because that was not an environment I would ever grow in. But, you know, not every experience would I think that way. And it has allowed me to, I guess, as you say, lighten the suffering of some of the things that have happened, you know, recently, that I can now kind of say, well, you know, what if I actually asked this person to do this for me?
Mm-hmm.
And so it is doing what you are wanting it to do, because it does make us think more clearly about, you know, if this is where we're at, and if these are the experiences that are happening to us, you know, what if?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So thank you.
Well, you're welcome, and thank you for having me on your show. It's been a pleasure to be here.
Great. And hopefully when you have your next one, or, you know, if you ever want to come back again, we'll have you back.
I look forward to it.
All right. Take care.
Bye-bye.